We are, of course, in the middle of the Numbers portion, and well, what some amazing portions there are right there in the middle of Bamidbar. Some of which we've missed, of course, with Korach and so on, but they go on, of course, with Balak. Some amazing lessons always to be learned from this portion. A real critical moment in Israel's history, one that we are meant to learn so much from, and we're going to learn a lot this morning. I hope will be challenging as well, the things that you've maybe heard before but maybe put in a slightly different way that will cause you to rethink the ways we've done this. In the Torah this morning we had from the book of Numbers, so that was chapter 24, 3-9. From the Haftarah there, from the book of Micah, that was 6:1-8. And from the Messianic writings, the second really short letter of John, Yochanan, and that was, I say, verses 1-13, or it was basically the whole letter. Some wonderful things to pick up on this. I mean, it is the passage of the donkey, and as I say, it's in the middle of some amazing things which go on at this time. But it's Balaam, really, I think, that we need to focus on today. He takes central stage, really, in this portion. And he does so because he's an intriguing figure, isn't he? The idea alone that someone would curse Israel and bring about her demise, that someone might think that such a thing was even possible. How would you even begin to think that that was going to be a way forward? A crazy idea that you think you could succeed in that, because to succeed in that would be to prove God wrong. Israel exists because God has called Israel into existence. And therefore to be able to curse the nation of Israel, or to attack her and bring Israel's existence to an end, would be exactly the same thing as saying that God was wrong, that he didn't call Israel into existence at all, that it was only man's doing, because that would show that it was just literally a man's thing. But after all these thousands of years, after all the many, many, and not just the biblical accounts, the many attempts through history, and even in our modern days, right up to this time in history, where the people, enemies of God, have tried again and again and again, the Balaams of this world and the spirit of Balaam, which takes hold of nations and kingdoms and forces and movements and everything else around this world, which today are still trying to seek Israel's demise. Which bit of this lesson do you not understand? Israel still exists. You cannot win. And it doesn't matter how much you fill the streets of London chanting against Israel and cursing Israel and doing whatever you want to do, you will fail. Because God is with Israel. You cannot stop this. God's will can never be overcome. It never has been overcome. It will never be overcome. What God has planned to happen in this world is going to happen. It cannot ever be stopped. And you say, yeah, but Rabbi, you know, people get in the way. We can choose not to follow God. We can throw spanners in God's works in this way. We can sabotage it. And you know what? Yes, you can. Because God has given you absolutely free will. You can try and sabotage God's will with your will if you want. But I absolutely guarantee you this. God's will in the global plan of all eternity will always prevail. And I want to say this quite clearly. If you're stupid enough, foolish enough as a human being, or as a nation, or a kingdom, or a movement, or whatever it may be, if you're foolish enough to get in God's way, then he will remove you from his will. Because his will triumph. You get in his way, and he will skirt around you, and he will use someone else. Thinking of the book of Esther, of course, immediately comes to mind, doesn't it, when you think of this. You know, if not you, then someone else will get up. Someone else will. Someone will do this. Someone will do God's will. If not you, step to one side, because there'll be people who will. But you cannot stop what God is doing. You simply cannot do this. You know, even now in today's world, where we see what's going on, you know there are only two countries in the whole world which have God's name. I say countries, people groups, which have God's name in them. Do you know who they are? The Israelites and the Ishmaelites. Quite interesting. And all the way through history, there's been this competing tension between these two, as it were. Which one, which brother, which descendant is the right inheritor of the promises of God? And I tell you now, the battle that we see today, even what we saw back 2 years ago, all of this is hinging on this ancient warfare between Israel and Ishmael in this way. Which one is real? Which one is genuine? Which one will triumph at the end of history? And we know which one triumphs at the end of history. Israel. Because that was the chosen descendant who came down. That was the one that God chose. He said, this one, this path, not the others, this child, this son will be mine. This son will be my nation. Election and choice at the heart of what Israel has always been. And yet, it is Balaam of all people. Isn't it strange, weird? You know, we began the reading there, didn't we? Matovu, how great, you know, how pleasant it is to live in the tents of Israel and so on. Balaam of all people, who set out to curse Israel, ends up blessing Israel, who is credited with giving some of the end times prophecy, even about Israel. I'm going to read a couple of passages for you here. This is from the book of Numbers, 24, and flipping in, first of all, verse 17. It's a fantastic prophetic, messianic prophetic verse. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Yaakov, a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and batter the brow of Moab, and destroy all the sons of Chumot. Messianic prophecy in the mouth of Balaam, looking forward to the end times of Mashiach. I see him, but not right now. I see him, he's coming. I behold him, but not near. And that was in Balaam's day. Speaking, being moved with the Spirit of God to bring a powerful messianic prophecy in the midst of everything that's going on amongst the Israelites at that time. In Balaam's mouth of all people. But he also says this as well. And now, indeed, this is verse 14. And now indeed I'm going to my people. Come, I will advise you what this people will do to your people in the latter days. And there's a whole prophecy in there about what Balaam says, not just about the Mashiach's arrival, but about what would happen to the nations and so on. In his mouth, prophecies of the latter days, the end times. And it did make me smile when I was reading this, because I just thought to myself, oh, I've read this. These are the latter day, you know, the latter day prophecies and so on. And immediately in my mind I've got people going, oh no, that's Christian. That's Christian, that is, when people prophesy about the latter days. Oh, people go preaching on about this, about the end times, and keep banging on about the end times. It's so Christian. Wrong. It is totally Jewish. It's in the Tanakh. In fact, it's all the way through the Tanakh, let alone the Isaiah and Ezekiel. They're all prophesying in some way or other about the end times and what is going to come. And yet some people talk about this as if it's something weird or cultic or something else. It's in the Tanakh, it's in the Torah, and we will talk about the end times. It is Jewish. It is Judaism. At the core of it all is this eschatological thinking. Judaism teaches about the end times. It does. I've got books on my shelf in my library written by rabbis talking about the end times. It's not Christian. It's thoroughly Jewish at its heart. Because there's always been predictions about what was going to come when we get to this time period. But I'm going to read something to you, if you still don't believe me. I want you to think, while reading this, think to yourself for a second, where does this come from? What's the source of what I'm reading? Here we go. In the approach of Mashiach, impudence will increase and high costs will pile up. The vine shall bring forth its fruit, but wine will nevertheless be expensive. There will be no one to give reproof. People who fear sin will be held in disgust, and the truth will be absent. The youth will shame the face of elders. Elders will stand before minors. A son will disgrace a father. A daughter will rise up against her mother. A daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his household. The face of the generation will be like the face of a dog. A son will no longer be ashamed before his father. And upon what is there for us to rely? Only upon our Father in heaven. So what are you thinking? I would think probably most of you are probably going, well, maybe Matthew 24, maybe somewhere around there, in some of the gospel there, some of the things that Yeshua said. Well, surprise, surprise, it isn't actually in the Messianic writings at all. It's, of course, Mishnah Sota 49. It's Jewish traditional writings, where it comes from, and yet when you hear it, the echoes of what Yeshua was saying are so strong. Paralleled. This is nothing new in the mouth of Yeshua. Traditional Jewish thinking and understanding about the end times, there's nothing in that passage I've just read to you there which literally could not have been in Yeshua's own mouth as he was predicting the end times and what was going to come in Matthew 24 and elsewhere. What Yeshua was telling our people 2,000 years ago was fully in line with this first century Jewish thinking. You know, Yeshua didn't invent end times theology. Christianity came and stole it. But it's always been Jewish. And yet in most people's minds today, it's as if it's only the church which talks about the end times. I think it's the time that Judaism, Jewish people, started talking about the end times. We know. Because of Jewish universal thinking. In the end times, the nations will be coming in. We're beginning to see that. Messianic Judaism's rise today is a call also to the nations to repent and come to the one true God of Israel, to take on the yoke of Torah, to come and join the people of Israel, become Jews, and become part of that one nation, which is God's own called, established nation that is His. Just think of Yaakov's prophecy over the 12 tribes. I mean, there's so many passages that you can go to if you're looking for end times prophecy in Judaism, but it is always there. And you know that there is one link that runs all the way through it. I mean, it wasn't directly mentioned here, but if you go to other passages, it is. There's something which comes up again and again and again and again about the end times period, which we need to know about because it is really, really important. And you know what that one thing is? Deception. Deception. According to all the sources that we've got, if there's one thing which leaks out about living through those end times, whenever they are, and we may be in them, we may be not, I'm not saying that, but whenever they are, but if we are in them now, if we are beginning to get into that end time period, then if deception is going to be the hallmark of everything that we see, hear, and experience. The real hallmark of the times. Four times in Matthew 24, four times Yeshua pleads with Israel, pleads with his Jewish brothers and sisters. He's not talking to the church. There was no church. He's talking to Israel. He's talking to Jewish people around him in his sermons and his preaching. And four times he pleads with these people not to be deceived. Again and again and again he says, be wary of deception. The end times is going to be full of deception. You're going to be misled. You're going to mishear. You're going to misunderstand. You're going to go in weird tangents and directions and it could all go wrong. Deception is at the heart of it all. His final conclusion, take heed, therefore, that no one deceives you, he says. No one deceives you. The fact that he reiterates this again and again and again actually is a warning shot for us, because what he's saying by that is, it is possible that you can be deceived. And Yeshua was really concerned about this. I mean, we're talking about Balaam here because we mentioned this already. You know, we know how Balak and Balaam eventually brought the downfall, as it were, of our people at that time. He brought them about because of deception. What people heard and saw and what they got bits of this and that and the other. They've been on so many websites, they were so confused that eventually when something happened, that's it, gone. I mean, there's nothing left to stand, as it were. Take heed that no one deceives you. People, we're living in a world right now where black is white, white is black, evil can be good. We're living in a world where everything is turned on its head. And frankly, no one knows which way is up. Welcome to postmodernity. We've talked about it often enough. That's the world we live in. The rejection of absolute values. Everything is on a sliding spectrum. Everything can be good or bad depending on the context. Blah, 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 blah. That's not how God sees it. And we can talk about good and evil because, of course, in our present day, those words, those titles themselves really barely have any meaning anymore. Deception. We had it right back at the beginning. Again, I mentioned it, Israel, Ishmael. Deception. One is real, one is not. I'm sorry, that sounds dreadfully unwoke in today's world, but I'm going to say it again. One is real, one is called of God, the other is deception. It's not real. It's fake. It's not what God has called into existence. Don't get me wrong. The Lord promised that he would bless Ishmael. We must never forget that. But that does not mean that we should mix them up and say one is this and one is that and then blend them and mix them and think it's going to be okay. One follows the God of Israel, the other one does not. It's important that we stand on the truth of this. Because if we do not, deception lurks at the door and can then lead us off in weird ways. It's always been, through history, deception. It's always been that way in so many, many ways. It's deception that leads people astray. It's almost the truth. It's not quite the truth. It's close to it. It's similar to it. And it all gets mixed up. But today, everything, it seems, is just being thrown to the winds. You know, I remember when we first started in the Messianic movement, well, in the UK now, well over 30 years ago, I was staggered how quickly deception and error began to creep in. It was not long before that people in the movement were saying, well, maybe Yeshua isn't God. Everything was up for grabs. The whole babies being chucked out with bathwaters. And everything was up for grabs, and everything could be deconstructed and re-established in whatever way they wanted to. I tell you, the heresy, the errors and the deception was unrestrained and unparalleled, and it shocked me to my core. Because I thought as soon as all that was gone, people just went for it, following their own ideas and thoughts and doing whatever they wanted to do. Deception is always lurking. Do you know what the biggest problem and why Yeshua was so strong about this with deception? About this deception in the last days in particular? The one core bit about deception, it isn't obvious. Deception doesn't come up, slap you around the face and say, nice to meet you, I'm deception. I wish it did. Because you know what? We wouldn't fall for it, would we? But it doesn't. If you knew what deception was, you'd run a mile from it. Of course you would, but it doesn't do that. It works. Deception works. It worked with our people back at the time of Balaam and Bilak. It works so frequently because it isn't immediately obvious, at least to start with. Deception dresses itself up in fake spirituality and piety. We saw this with Balaam's crazy claims, you know, to be the one whose eyes were opened and could see it all. And I mean, read his crazy words. I mean, honestly, when you know who this man is, it's insane what he is saying. And yet these are the words which deceived people to listen to him. and then put in practice, of course, what was then being taught and suggested they should do. A fake spirituality, a fake piety. I've got to say, in particular, as regards the piety and the bits that go with it, and the holiness, often which becomes so obsessive, so fleshly, so superficial. You know, I get disturbed when I see people get so caught up with these things in the fleshly realm, because it's so obvious to look at and think that's fake, it's not real. You know, it's people get so caught up with all the bits and the superficial nature of it. You know what the Word of God says? You test people by their fruit of the Spirit, not how long their sleeves are. Got it? It's important. Clothing can be used to dress up all kinds of things. Equally other things you can do to dress up, but you know what? It's not what's at the heart. What is at the heart, where truth and reality is of the presence of God and the evidence of a relationship with God, is revealed through the fruit of the Spirit. It's a long-term thing. You don't just see it from one day to the next. You don't just go, oh good, she's got sleeves right down to the wrist. This must be a good place to be. I'm not being cheap. I'm not being superficial myself here on saying that. It is really important. Deception dresses itself up well, but it's not the real deal. But it works, and it breaks my heart to see it working with people. You know, it particularly works, and I've done a lot of thinking about this. People get deceived. It works, especially amongst believers and those who truly want to serve the Lord. Why? Because we trust, because we're naive, and we're so often gullible. I hear again and again and again stories of wicked people who've wheedled their way into congregations around the world. It happens again and again and again. It happens because a good story is spun. People believe it who genuinely want to believe what they're hearing. Gullibility takes place, and before long you've got someone in the community who is actively working to destroy it. The problem is we always try to see the best in people, don't we, as believers? We do. I do. You do. No one willingly embraces this because it's come up to you and say, hi, I'm deception. You don't do that. You want to believe. You want to assume that when people come to you, that they mean well. I get emails from people. I get phone calls from people. Wouldn't it be awful? I mean, I don't think you'd be too impressed, would you? If every single time this happened, I were going, so who are you? Send me your passport now. How long do you think those people would be on the phone with me? Maybe I should be saying that. I don't know. But I don't think it's the way to go. I don't think the answer to that is to become cynical and closed off. But we must be vigilant. In an age where truth is in short supply and deception and deceivers are everywhere. But you know, we of all people, we must believe and trust and have hope and have confidence. If we shut that down, then the world becomes a very dark place. Who was it who said, I want to believe? Scalden? Money? I forget which one it was now. But you know, I want to believe. We do. We want to trust. We want to be that of those open people. But deception lurks. And it causes havoc. It happens later when it becomes clear and obvious what things are going on. But deception is there. Of course, it always brings us back in all of this to Balak and to Bilam again. The one hallmark, I think, of the deception that we're talking about here, it was not a direct assault on the faith and practices of Israel that caused Israel's later failure. I think it's intriguing, if you read it carefully, a close reading of the text, it was deception that caused Israel to fall. It was not a full-out onslaught onto theology or the teaching. It was not that direct. To go directly is almost like to slap around the face and say, hello, I'm deception. That's not going to work. It's more subtle than that. There was deception which was going on. The deception which Bilam and Balak were putting and injecting into the camp when the cursing fell, when that full-on onslaught to curse and bring about demise was failing. The next step was to bring in some fake teaching, to cause idolatry, to cause a slide. that spiritual poison that came into the camp, confusion, leading people to doubt what was true, doubt each other, doubt what was a real faith. All of that causing people to change their practices to reflect other people's spiritual opinions and ideas. And we know where it leads to, because next week's sermon tells you exactly where it led to. It's a very subtle deception process that goes on if you look at it clearly. And if you look at where it led, in particular, this particular deception that was going on here, but there are many, many ways of doing it, but this particular one at that time with Balaam here, it was the mix of man's ideas, non-Jewish practices cobbled together with actual Jewish faith and practice that caused the fall. It was the mixture that did it. That's what deception has at its core, the mixture. It was not the pure teaching that God had given. It was other things put in there, man's ideas, man's thoughts, dressed up. Today we would call it tradition. We'd call it all kinds of things. Bits and pieces added on, bolted on. But it becomes top heavy and falls over. And the crazy thing about it is you'd think that our people would have recognized what was going on, because we'd already been through the golden calf episode. That was deception. That wasn't God. Why are we dancing around a golden calf? Why? It was deception of the highest order. It felt Jewish, it sounded Jewish. Again, if you go back to that Torah passage, it wasn't that long ago, you know. And Aaron eventually acquiesces to it all because they want to worship God, but he says, well, look, we'll make this a high holy day and we'll do that. Changing bits of the Torah there because it sounded Jewish, it sounded okay, and therefore they fell into the trap of the deception. And Torah is influenced by man's ideas and thinking. When traditions and outside cultural influences dominate over the actual text of Torah and its intent, then deception is never far away. Because it becomes what man wants to do rather than what God wants to do. And what Balaam and Balak wanted here was to lead Israel astray. If Israel could be caused to sin, then they wouldn't have to worry about cursing Israel, because if Israel was in sin, they knew enough of the Torah to know that God himself would begin to bring judgment upon the nation because of their sin. And Balak and Balaam would have to just lean back and let it happen. It would be destroyed from the inside. So subtle, so deceptive, but we don't often see it coming. Just remember Yeshua's comments, again, crazy comments on one face. You can read it and just go, nah, that's not going to happen. Surely not. Yeshua said, he's warning people about running after fake messiahs in the desert. Oh, he's over here. Oh, he's over there. And you think for one moment, surely nobody in their right mind is ever going to do that, are they? Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe. Yeshua thought it was possible. How is it that people would actually go, oh good, oh okay, that must be the Mashiach then, let's go over there, or that one over there, and then you'll know. Don't ask exactly where it is in Russia, I think it's in Russia. There is someone right now who thinks he's the Messiah. He's got a huge following in Russia. That's where it is, I think it is. And you just think, you're not going to go rushing after that. Well, we may be not going to go rushing after that, but you know what, this guy has a huge crowd of followers who think he's the Messiah. One of the things that we regularly get in emails, as leaders, I get these emails too. And they say, big trumpet sounding warning, we're just letting you know Mashiach is coming on this and this time, and he's that person, and he's going to be this, that, and the other. And I'm going like, really? Delete. Now that's not going to, you know, it's not going to deceive me on that level. But clearly there are people who might be. There is a certain messianic fervor out there right now. Yeshua said they would or could fall foul of that type of deception. Mashiach was standing in the midst of our nation Israel, preaching, teaching for 3 years, the real Messiah. And he warned people, he said, there are others coming who will try and deceive you. And if you've dipped into one of the books I have on my shelves up there, the 50 Mashiachs, 50 Messiahs of the last 2,000 years, Yeshua wasn't wrong. There's been many, many who have come, even within Judaism, who have come and said, I'm the Messiah. Shaul has some challenging words on all of this in 2 Corinthians 11. He describes the source of deception, the source of deception of Hasatan. And he describes Hasatan there as an angel of light. It's kind of scary on one level, because this angel of light looks like it is light, but it's not. It's fake. And I think actually, you know, if the source of deception is Hasatan, the adversary, the evil one, call him what you want, if that is the source of deception, then Hasatan knows, as he learns here through the Balak and Bilam episode, it's not the direct attack that brings a downfall. It's sowing the seeds of deception. Light, but not quite light. Truth, but not quite truth. A bit of Jewishness, but not quite Judaism. Yeah. That's where it's at. Because believers aren't drawn to darkness, but to light. Darkness is not going to deceive believers. It's actually not. You know, Israel is meant to live as light. So of course the enemy tries to fake that in some way. The fake light that the enemy uses to deceive, not outright darkness. Close to the truth, but not the same. I'm thus able to deceive. You know, it's been interesting. If you think of it this way, right back from the beginning, another one has come into my mind here about the deception. Go back to the book of Bereshit, Adam and Chava. What is it that caused the first sin? Deception, wasn't it? What did Hasatan say? The cause, the originator of deception, the source of deception, Hasatan. What did he say to Chava that day? Did God say, sow the seeds of doubt? A bit of deceiving going on, a bit of deception going on. What did God really say? Are you that sure? Maybe it was this. Maybe he didn't say that. Maybe actually what he said was this. Maybe you misunderstood. Maybe it was meant to be that instead, and it wasn't that you will surely die, but maybe it's going to be something else in a different way, and blah, 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 blah. And deception suddenly appears. It was deception that caused Chava to ignore the truth, walk away from the light, and take the fake. It was close, but it wasn't real. She took the fake, and ever since, sin has destroyed this world. Deception lies at its heart. It's like Hasatan runs a parallel kingdom through all of history, and you can see this, and I'm talking about Ishmael, I'm talking about other fake religions and things around this as well. He runs this kind of fake parallel kingdom that runs through time that is almost right but isn't. You know, like you sometimes hear people say, I've heard this because I used to, as you know, I taught religious education in a school for a year, and I know this because this has often been put into the class from to say that all religions are the same. They basically all teach the same. They all teach the basic goodness and blah blah blah. They don't. They don't. If all you look at is a superficial level, then you will be deceived. They are not the same. Other gods are worshipped. Other values are brought in on the back of those ideas and thoughts. They are not the same. It's a deception of our age to say they are. And then it gets really scary, of course, because it comes home to our own community and other communities around the world of believers. And in the parable that we read about that is in the Messianic writing of the wheat and tares. That's really scary. That even within good, wholesome, spiritual, believing communities, there's wheat and there are tares that are literally in the community who are of you, but not of you. They are with you, but they were never with you. That's been prophesied for these times as well. The wheat and the tares, in fact, at that point where the community is growing and the field is growing up, it's almost as if it were impossible to tell the real and the fake. And it's pointing at the fact that it's only in the final harvest when Yeshua comes, when Mashiach comes again, and he will bring in the real harvest, at that point you get to really see who was fake and who was real. It's a real message for all of us in there. Where is the authentic? There's so many parallel copies competing, arising everywhere, but there's only one original, the Word of God. In the community, it teaches the fullness of the Torah, the fullness of the Spirit, a full Spirit-filled Judaism, of restoration, of inclusion of the nations to come in, to join the people of God, the fullness of the revelation of who God is. Seen it actually even in the last week. We had a discussion in the prayer meeting this week, which was stuck in my mind actually, because it's really, really important. Someone in the prayer meeting just was talking heatedly about this, and it's right, I think, on one level, it's right to think about it in this way. The way the word messianic is now being used in Israel. I'm sorry, Ben Gavir is not messianic. I'm speechless. I mean, there are no words. I'm sorry. That is not messianic in any way, shape, or form of the way that that word should be used. The way messianic is now being branded as right-wing political groups in Israel. But you know what I think frustrated me about that deception, because it is deception, it is not messianic. What I think frustrated me in all of that, and encouraged me, I think, on the same word, is the fact that Hasatan would not bother to try and dirty the name of messianic and the word messianic unless the real was beginning to have an effect. And that encouraged me. Because there's no other reason why Hasatan would bother to sully that term messianic unless he was really getting concerned that its power and its proper use and the real authentic idea of Messianic Judaism was beginning to take effect. And already you can see Hasatan working to manipulate and cause this terminology to get negative overtones and baggage in a way which eventually will stick, possibly even on us. And we know, you know, governments in the past, the moment they hear the word messianic, that's it, they're getting, whoa, 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 whoa. No, we don't like messianic. I mean, it happened in Israel, with Rome, it's happening today as well. You either get branded as messianic as being a complete rebel or whatever it might be, or a problem to society, or in our modern understanding, if it begins to stick, then we get the label of being maybe right-wing political Israeli group in that way. None of those things are true. Messianic means you follow Mashiach, Yeshua. That's what Messiah at its core has. And we must resist the abuse of that, the deception now beginning to be channeled onto that word to make sure that Messianic Judaism does not get sucked into something in that way. Messianic Judaism is the Judaism that Yeshua taught. That's what it is. That's what it's always been. But the fake is attempting to muscle in. In fact, in some ways, in many ways, it always has done. And we see it even from the kind of Christian groups that are adopting Jewish practices and so on, and yet still calling themselves Christians and thinking this is okay. The fake always exists next to the real. You know what the antidote for all of this is, in summary? It comes in Yaakov 4:7. Submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. It's a powerful, encouraging verse. Submit to God. Resist the devil and his deceptions. Resist it. And if you resist it, he will flee from you. Because he knows the deception won't hook. It won't stick. It's not going to have an impact on you, and he will flee from you. You know, you do not need to be tormented by Hasatan all the days of your life. If you resist the devil, he will flee. He's not going to hang around. So to have a healthy spiritual camp and community and congregation, to protect that healthy spiritual life, we, all of us, need to do these things. Submit, to God. Resist the enemy. Active resistance is required to defeat deception. We cannot be naive. We have to up our levels of discernment and understanding. We've got to pray. We've got to study. We've got to read. We've got to seek the truth and seek the Lord in it. I would like to think that had Bilam been actively resisted with the truth as Israel knew it in their day, that Israel would have been safe and they would not have fallen into idolatry. It was not a done deal. It's what you choose, it's what you do, it's how you decide, it's the path that you take from one day to the next. And to guard ourselves against deception in this world, both spiritually, politically, everywhere in this world, it is right. But if we submit to the Lord, submit to Him and resist being dragged off into strange directions, then Hasatan will flee and we will be free. Free still to serve the Lord in the way that He has told us to serve. Amen.